This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Trump goes off. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Tuesday, October 22nd. Thanks for being with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump aired his grievances with recent criticism he's received on issues like troops in Syria, the G7 location, and the impeachment inquiry.
Hundreds of thousands of people in California will need candles and flashlights again tomorrow when the state's biggest utility begins blackouts again.
In sports, the Patriots demolished the Jets in Monday Night Football and Game 1 of the World Series tonight, Washington at Houston.
And two counties in Ohio reach a settlement with four drug makers to avoid a trial over the opioid epidemic.
A jury had already been seated. Opening arguments were set for 9 o'clock, and both sides worked furiously in and around 1 o'clock. They finally reached a deal.
Scott Higham at the Washington Post on the $260 million settlement and why some are not happy with it. He's here in about 7 minutes. President Trump has aired out his frustrations with recent criticisms he's received. Before a cabinet meeting at the White House yesterday, he went off on a number of issues, including his Syria pullout decision.
Where is an agreement that said we have to stay in the Middle East for the rest of humanity, for the rest of civilization, to protect the Kurds? It never said that.
He also again denounced what he called the illegitimate impeachment inquiry by House Democrats. He then addressed the issue of potentially hosting next year's G7 summit at his own resort in Florida.
It would have been great, but the Democrats went crazy. Even though I would have done it free, saved the country a lot of money. Then they say, oh, but you'll get promotion. Who cares? You don't think I get enough promotion? I get more promotion than any human being that's ever lived.
The impeachment inquiry, by the way, was sparked by a whistleblower complaint that said Mr. Trump had pushed Ukraine's president to launch an investigation into former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter over their business dealings in Ukraine. Mr. Trump said he shouldn't have to focus on, quote, this kind of crap. More witnesses are scheduled to appear before Congress this week as part of the House impeachment inquiry. Today, Bill Taylor, a top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, is expected to testify before three House committees about text messages he sent about the holdup of $400 million in aid to Kiev. Meanwhile, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is complaining that the impeachment effort is holding up legislative action.
The only thing that seems to really inspire House Democrats these days is their obsession with overturning the results of the 2016 election.
Reaction from Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
It's well known in the country that the Senate is the legislative graveyard, that Leader McConnell has not put on the floor bill after bill after bill on major issues affecting the country that demand attention.
Separately, House Democrats have defeated an effort by Republicans to censure Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff. They've taken issue with his exaggerated account of a phone call President Trump made to his counterpart in Ukraine. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberals have held on to power after a close election, but will have a minority government that will need the support in Parliament of a smaller left-leaning party. The vote yesterday showed a deeply divided country with the defeated Conservatives winning the popular vote, while a resurgent separatist bloc made big strides in the mainly French-speaking province of Quebec.
And to those who did not vote for us, know that we will work every single day for you. We will govern for everyone.
The Liberals had won or were leading in 156 out of 338 seats in Parliament. That is far short of the 170 seats needed for a second straight majority government. Mr. Trudeau, who took power in 2015 as a charismatic figure promising sunny ways, saw his popularity drop over old photos of him in blackface and his handling of a corporate corruption case. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
When it comes to keeping your small business's valuable information safe, Dell Small Business Technology Advisors can recommend tailored security solutions like servers, storage, networking. Plus, right now, get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. Running your own small business is a big challenge, but with the right partner, it's a lot easier. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
I've been around a long time, seeing a lot of gadgets show up that are supposed to make my job easier. Digital screwdrivers, hammer 2.0, the new improved nail, now with more pointiness. You know what really makes my job easier? Grainger. Easy reordering, easy inventory solutions, and easy to do business with every time. Gadgets come and go. You want reliability. You want Grainger. Call, clickgrainger.com, or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for spending time with us. Two counties in Ohio have settled with four drug companies before a landmark federal trial over responsibility for the opioid epidemic, striking a $260 million deal that emerged just an hour before opening arguments were set to start. The deal is with the big three distributors, McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health, along with the Israeli generics drug maker Teva Pharmaceuticals. The agreement does not include a fifth defendant, Walgreens, the retail drugstore chain that was sued over its distribution operation. Walgreens' case has been postponed. More from Scott Higham, investigative reporter at The Washington Post. Scott, how did this go down?
The drug companies, I think, paid more than they wanted to. There was an earlier offer on the table that was rejected by, these are just two counties in Ohio that they settled with. You know, there's 2,300 lawsuits pending against about two dozen companies. And those are, you know, cities and counties and towns from all across the country. These are just two test cases in Cuyahoga and Summit counties, which are right next to Cleveland. And they finally decided to settle for $260 million for the four companies. So it's three of the largest distributors in America, Cardinal Health, McKesson Corporation, and AmerisourceBergen, each agreed to pay a total of $215 million. And then a manufacturer by the name of Teva agreed to pay $45 million to settle just those two counties. So there's a lot of counties ahead of them.
And this is a bellwether, right? So those other lawsuits and settlements will be paying attention to what happened here in these two counties in Ohio.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you look at the stock prices on Wall Street, I think that people are a little bit nervous about the size of the settlement for just two counties. And with so many cases ahead of them, their share prices, you know, fell, you know, between 2% and 4% on this news. And so, you know, we'll have to see what happens going forward with whether they can reach a global settlement. You know, the judge in this case has said pretty emphatically that he wants a settlement because there are so many people who are suffering in so many communities across the country, and they need money now. They can't wait for extended trials and appeals, and he's really urging both sides to settle this. So I think the judge might feel pleased that at least these two counties are now getting the money that they so desperately need. And the county executives and the attorneys representing those two counties said that they will immediately start getting money onto the streets to, you know, drug rehab, into hospitals, into police departments, into fire departments, into all kinds of places that have really been overtaxed by this epidemic.
We're speaking with Scott Higham, investigative reporter at The Washington Post. He's written a piece about this $260 million settlement that happens between two counties in Ohio involved in this opioid epidemic case. So this averts a trial. The companies here don't admit any wrongdoing, and it struck me from reading your story that that doesn't sit well with maybe a couple of the victims' families.
Yeah, you know, we've been writing about this epidemic for 3 years and met lots of families along the way, and you can't imagine just how devastated those families are and how these communities are completely devastated. And I think everybody in these communities wants to know who they should be, you know, holding accountable for this epidemic, and not to hear an apology or an admission of wrongdoing, I think strikes some as being a little bit hollow. There was a father who came to the trial was standing outside the courtroom. He lost his son to an opioid epidemic. He was addicted to pain pills, and he died of a heroin overdose. And you know, he was very upset. He said, "You know, look, I was hoping that I would get an apology. There would be some closure, at least from these companies, and they would admit that their behavior contributed to this epidemic, but that's not what happened."
Walgreens was not part of this settlement. What happens with Walgreens?
So Walgreens has declined to settle, and so they're going to be carved out of this particular bellwether case, and they're going to be moved into another one. It's another track that's going to start probably in the next few months. And so they will be tried along with a number of other companies who are, you know, accused of fueling the epidemic. They deny any involvement. They say that, you know, that they were just filling legally prescribed drugs, and they dispute all these allegations. So we'll see what happens when they get close to trial, and if they'll decide to settle or face a jury.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Higham, investigative reporter at The Washington Post. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, lawmakers are keeping up their push to impose sanctions on Turkey if it does not end its offensive in northeastern Syria. And a leading Kurdish politician called on President Trump to stop the ethnic cleansing of her people. The president says he does not want to leave any U.S. troops in Syria, aside from a small number to secure oil production.
We never agreed to, you know, protect the Kurds. We fought with them for 3.5 to 4 years. We never agreed to protect the Kurds for the rest of their lives.
Trump says his decision is simply a delivery of a 2016 campaign promise to bring U.S. troops home. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has won a second term in Canada's national elections, losing the majority, but delivering unexpectedly strong results despite having been weakened by a series of scandals that tarnished his image as a liberal icon. Trudeau's Liberal Party took the most seats in Parliament, giving it the best chance to form a government.
We want safer communities, a cleaner planet, and a good quality of life. We want this for ourselves, for our neighbors, and for our kids and grandkids.
But falling short of a majority means liberals will have to rely on an opposition party to pass legislation. Police in Florida have removed 3 children and 245 animals from what they call deplorable living conditions. Edgewater police say it was immediately evident neither the children nor the animals were being cared for properly. Authorities say the 8, 9, and 10-year-old children were living with 3 adults amid rotting food and animal waste. Investigators counted 95 mice and 83 rats, as well as birds, rabbits, opossums, guinea pigs, bearded dragons, dogs, hamsters, cats, and a hedgehog. The adults will be charged with child abuse and animal cruelty. New York City's Central Park has 23 statues of men who left their mark in history, but not a single one honoring the accomplishments of a woman. That's about to change. A city commission has voted to erect a monument depicting 3 pioneers in the fight for women's rights: Susan B. Anthony, Elizabeth Stanton, and Sojourner Truth. The work will be dedicated in August. Next year marks 100 years since women won the right to vote.
All right, thank you, Jen. It is 23 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Bookshelves have become cluttered with books on all kinds of decluttering. Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gamerman says global lifestyle philosophies are doing battle over the best path, not just to orderly closets, but to organize thoughts and neater emotional spaces. Ellen, what's trending?
There are books now about every kind of decluttering that you can imagine. Emotional decluttering, physical decluttering, relationship decluttering, and simplifying, kind of back to basics campaigns that are inspiring genre of books that didn't exist before Marie Kondo and The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which came to the U.S. 5 years ago.
Yeah. Is she to blame or / get credit? Is that what's happening here?
Yes, I think so. I mean, there have always been simplifying books and organizing books that go back, way back. But she really turned it into a lifestyle, and it has been a growing and very lucrative area for publishers, and a lot of people are jumping on the bandwagon, whether that means decluttering or some form of like Asian sort of minimalism philosophy that comes in. We just rounded up a whole bunch of these books and looked at all of the different ways they suggest that you simplify your life.
All right, so take us through a couple of these, because you referenced there's a Japanese approach, right? There's a Korean approach. Explain what some of these are and what they mean.
Okay, well, one of the new books is about Japanese concept called Ichigo Ichie, which is about making the most of life's moments, really not overcomplicating what you want out of your day or your moments, you know, just really kind of savoring. So they encourage you to, this is two authors, encourage you to keep a journal describing different smells that you encounter during the day. Look up, study the shapes of clouds, eat an apple with a blindfold on and really focus on what it tastes like. And just try for a minute to think about not thinking. Okay. That's a tough one.
Right. Generally speaking, are these books quick reads or are these deep thinking novels?
No, they're quick reads. A lot of them have pictures and illustrations, and they're very slim with a beautiful, sleek cover. They're very inviting, and you pick it up, and the authors say, oh, you could just dip into it, dip in and out of it. Although I did hear about one decluttering consumer who had so many of these books that when her table broke, she used the decluttering books to hold up an end of the table instead of a table leg.
Thanks, Ellen. Ellen Gamerman at the Wall Street Journal. Other philosophies, by the way, in books that she mentions, Ikigai, which is the Japanese reason for being, and two of them from Scandinavia, Sisu, which is Finnish resilience, and Lagom, which is Swedish moderation. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Now that Human Resources VP Ashley Campbell has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, she's managing her workforce like a rock star. She even has her own hype song.
I'm the spark before the fire. I'm the power in the train. I
have a really diverse workforce with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
Don't stop. I'm the dream and you should know that.
Now we're motivating and engaging the right people every step of the way.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us and welcome into Tuesday, October 22. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Another witness testifies today in House Democrats' impeachment inquiry. A 5-day truce in Syria set to expire today. A temporary ban on the sale of flavored vaping products goes into effect in Montana today. Game one of the World Series tonight. Jets quarterback Sam Darnold said he was seeing ghosts from the Patriots' defense as his team lost 33-0. News about Duchess Meghan, nobody cares, and a bizarre condition in a man's stomach in which he can unknowingly make himself drunk. That story in about 20 minutes. A new poll finds Pete Buttigieg within striking distance of Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren in Iowa. How has the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, pushed his way into the top tier of Democratic presidential candidates? Maureen Croppy, Washington correspondent at USA Today, took a look at his mayoral background, which he points to on the campaign trail. Maureen, what's happening here with the polling, first off?
He has climbed into, he's made it a three-way race in Iowa, according to this poll, and it's, you know, polls are one snapshot in time. And this is a poll that comes after the most recent debate, Democratic debate from last week, in which he and Amy Klobuchar stood out more than they had in past debates at trying to make an argument more from the middle against the front runners, Warren and Sanders, about why their approach would be a better one to take to the general electorate.
Boy. I mean, he is the mayor of the fourth largest city in Indiana, right? Not like coming out of L.A., Chicago, New York or somewhere like that. So what does he point to in terms of things he's gotten done in a fairly small town that would translate, say, at the White House.
And one reason I wanted to take a look at his mayoral record is because when he became mayor of South Bend, which, as you say, is only the fourth largest city in Indiana, he was the youngest mayor of a city of that size or larger in the nation. And so I wanted to see how did he stand out? How did he be? What was he doing there that was different? And why did he end up with support from a lot of mayors and mayors who were older, more experienced, saw him as a role model? So I wanted to see what he was doing uniquely or different in South Bend. And one of the things that he did there is he really took a sort of innovative approach, or wanted to try new things. He had a background. One aspect of his background, of his resume, is that he worked for the consulting firm McKinsey, so had a familiarity with using data to try to solve problems. He created an innovation office in the city, which was unusual for a city of that size, and the things that they were doing there stood out, got them invited to the White House and to national efforts to try to spur local innovations. He was competing. The things he was doing there, he was consistently finding himself in the company of much larger cities, as you say, like Chicago and New York and Dallas, even though South Bend is not a very large city.
Yeah. He's got some high-tech sewers. That's what you pointed out in the story, right?
Right. Yeah, it's somewhat amusing to think that somebody who could be the next president, one of the things he boasts about is having the smartest sewers in the world. That's not something that you usually hear someone bragging about as a qualification for being commander in chief. But that's an example of the way that they use technology to save money, as well as it was also one of the examples of the collaboration that the city did with Notre Dame, which for years had been a little bit isolated from the city, and I'm told that Buttigieg was critical in helping get the collaboration going with Notre Dame that had that technology, and now there's a company, the technology that they create there that is used by to help the sewers. There's a company now based in South Bend that is selling that technology all around the world.
I thought it was interesting, too. He pointed out to you the phrase fighting. He doesn't like the word fighting when it comes to the campaign. What was his point there?
Yeah, that's one of the ways he's trying to distinguish himself from Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. And you hear Elizabeth Warren talk about fighting a lot. That's one of her, I will fight for you. That's a big part of her message. And Buttigieg has, in addition, one of the things that he's been stressing is the need for unity, and that we can't, after Trump, we're going to need to bring the country back together. So when we talked about the difference between him and Elizabeth Warren on Medicare for All, for example, which is one of the big differences between them, his argument is that he wants to take a slower approach to get to Medicare for All, so it's not just about, you can't just fight your way to achieve something, that you have to be able to bring the country along, and that the approach that he's taking on Medicare for All would get you there without dividing the country.
Thanks, Maureen. Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, we always like to impart lessons during this segment when we can, even if they seem like things we should already know. Today's lesson: don't ride a Segway while drunk. This after Florida officers found a 48-year-old man swerving on a Segway and driving it in the opposite lanes of traffic in Polk County. The man, eventually pulled over by deputies, smelled of booze and had bloodshot eyes and slurred speech. He later revealed that he had consumed 2 bottles of wine before getting on the 2-wheeled vehicle. His alcohol level was nearly 3 times the legal limit. The man was arrested for driving under the influence and later released on bond.
Mm.
So, 2 bottles of wine, Gordon Deal. Could you imagine yourself, hopping on a Segway and riding around town?
No. No, I couldn't imagine drinking 2 bottles of wine and standing up, quite
right.
Honestly. I'm a lightweight.
Yeah.
I did drink, actually, a whole bottle over the course of an afternoon and evening several Saturdays ago. I forget what it was.
Really? That's the best you can do?
I'm sorry.
That's your big drinking story?
Is that soft?
It's the course of an afternoon and evening.
That's weak.
That's like a glass every 2 hours. Okay. That's what that is.
That's not man status, yeah. Is that what you're saying?
Probably not.
Okay.
So look, for what you're saying is we're not going to find you in this situation,
yeah,
anytime
not.
Soon, so we can all rest easy.
Probably not. That, I'd imagine that might be difficult, though.
Yeah.
Operating a Segway.
Oh, yeah.
While drunk.
It would be difficult for me, period. End of story. There's a lot of balance required there. I saw something a couple weeks ago when I was in New York City, one of those things you're only going to see in New York. I saw a gentleman look to be, I don't know, maybe about 70 years old, riding a Segway with a helmet on,
okay.
Walking his dog while texting at the same time on his smartphone.
Wow.
Requiring all kinds of coordination that I couldn't pull off now, and I'm like half the guy's age. So, you know, kudos to him. On the sidewalk, too, by the way. You know, could have easily run over me or anybody else, but he had it all under control.
Man.
And a dad in the UK, Gordon says, he wasn't even angry, but instead concerned and impressed after his 3-year-old daughter made the most of the 10 minutes she was left unattended by eating not one, not two, but 18 cups of yogurt. According to Fox News, Aaron Weissall from Nottingham, England, recently shared a hilarious video of his accomplished-looking daughter, Olivia, sitting in front of the empty yogurts, which she took from the refrigerator when Weissall was fixing a fence in the backyard. Weissall says it was their son, Oscar, who came outside and alerted him to Olivia's snacking. It's always the little brother.
Mm-hmm.
Although he admits he wasn't expecting to see Olivia sitting in front of 18 empty Yoplait yogurts when he got inside. Weissall also figured he should snap a photo and share it online, where it has since gone viral. The dad says that all yogurts will be stored on the top shelf of the fridge from now on. And to answer your next question, Weissall says Olivia's stomach was just fine following the yogurt binge, and she even managed to eat her dinner later that night.
You go, Olivia.
I tell you, I feel a kinship with Olivia here. That would totally be me at her age, for
That's
sure.
That's funny. 18 yogurts.
Yes.
That's
great. Scattered about the floor, and her looking just, you know, just fine about it.
Well, girl knows what she wants.
Yeah.
I mean, even at 3, she's wildly aware of the advantage of probiotics.
Right.
So there you go.
Exactly. She had a healthy day.
Let's watch Yoplait turn this into some sort of marketing thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, that's coming any second now.
Securing their next generation of customers. Thanks, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
When it comes to keeping your small business's valuable information safe, Dell Small Business Technology Advisors can recommend tailored security solutions like servers, storage, networking. Plus, right now, get up to 45% off select business computers with Intel Core processors. Running your own small business is a big challenge, but with the right partner, it's a lot easier. To speak with an advisor today, call 877-BUY-DELL. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Watching TV is a lot more fun than going through your bank statements, perhaps. A new survey finds we spend, on average, about 70 times as much time a month watching TV as we do tending to our finances. The report from the financial site The Ascent crunches the numbers from the federal government's own American Time Use Survey. Typical time spent a month on budgeting, financial planning, and the like, 1 hour and 12 minutes. That's about 2 minutes a day. Time a month spent watching TV, 85 hours and 12 minutes. That's nearly 3 hours a day. MarketWatch says with companies from Netflix to Amazon to Apple pushing a feast of streaming content onto viewers, it's no wonder we're gorging for hours a day. Financial planners warn that when we fail to check in on our finances on a regular basis, we're missing out on opportunities and taking risks with our money. Their advice: set aside a small amount of time each month, and if you do nothing else, review all your bank and credit card statements for things like fraud or mistaken charges. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, more witnesses are scheduled to appear before Congress this week as part of the House impeachment inquiry, while some Trump administration officials say they will continue to refuse to cooperate with the Democrats' probe. Bill Taylor, a top U.S. diplomat in Ukraine, is expected to testify today before the House Intelligence, Foreign Affairs, and Oversight Committees in a series of text messages the House has made public. Taylor pressed former Special Envoy to Ukraine Ukraine Kurt Volker and Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland about why nearly $400 million in aid to Ukraine had been delayed. The hold on the aid is at the center of the impeachment inquiry. President Trump is lamenting that he was forced to move next year's G7 summit from his private golf club in Florida after bipartisan criticism that he was trying to profit off the presidency. Speaking during a cabinet meeting, Trump said, "It would have been the greatest G7 ever if held at his Doral resort outside Miami."
"We'll look at other locations. I don't think it'll be as exciting. I don't think it'll be as good. It'll cost the country a fortune because it's very expensive."
Trump dismissed concerns that he was trying to get free publicity for his resort. He reversed course Saturday night after Republicans joined Democrats in criticizing the move. Israel's president says Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ended his quest to form a new coalition, a step that pushes the country into new political uncertainty. Netanyahu fell short of securing a 61-seat parliamentary majority in last month's national election. But President Reuven Rivlin gave Netanyahu the first opportunity to form a government because he had more support than any other candidate. It's possible now that Israel will be forced to hold its third election in less than 1 year. Much about Leonardo da Vinci remains an enigma. The smile of the Mona Lisa, why the world's most famous painter left so many works unfinished. A new exhibit at the Louvre of 160 of his works, marking the 500th anniversary of the Italian master's death, tries to sketch out as complete a picture of the artist and thinker as possible. The exhibit, opening Thursday, includes da Vinci masterpieces, dozens of studies, and scientific sketches.
Wow. Left a lot of works unfinished, but they're trying to put together a complete picture here, I see.
Well, if 160, something's got to be done.
Yeah. Maybe he had short attention span. Is that the reason he couldn't finish a lot of
those
lot of
arts
works?
Are a little weird.
6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A man suspected of drinking and driving was actually suffering from a bizarre condition that caused him to brew beer in his gut. An unnamed 46-year-old was pulled over by police in 2014 with a breathalyzer showing he was five times over the legal limit. The man claimed he had not drank a drop of alcohol. Yahoo Lifestyle says it was not until 2017 that doctors discovered he had auto-brewery syndrome. This is not a joke, by the way. This incredibly rare condition occurs when the body converts sugary and starchy foods into alcohol. When a patient eats carbs or sugar, the yeast breaks these foods down into alcohol, leaving patients drunk. Also known as gut fermentation syndrome, the condition is so rare, there is said to have been just five reported cases in the past 30 years. ABS has no cure, with patients being advised to avoid sugar and carbs to help control their symptoms. Every time the man ate carb-rich foods, the alcohol content in his blood shot up to as much as 11 times the legal limit for driving. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.